Testing 1 2. Testing 1 2. Welcome to the Alternative Cinema Podcast. This is the Alternative Cinema Podcast, and my name is Michael Rosso, and my guests today on the Alternative Cinema Podcast are actually two former employees of the studio. I have Henrik Kudo.
Howdy.
And Joe Kolbeck.
Hi. I couldn't do anything.
No, Joe still can't
do
anything.
You started in the marketing department.
Yes.
Didn't you show up on your first day in like a dress shirt and tie, like an idiot?
I did, yeah.
A few days.
No, just my first.
Oh, the first?
Yeah, and then I saw that everyone was dressed casual, and I...
You also brought donuts for everyone. I remember hearing that, too.
Yes, I did, yeah.
Joe, first day here, and he claims it was a long time ago, but I guess time is just fleeting by. You're saying this was like 2004.
Yes.
That's incredible, Joe. It's incredible that it was such a long time ago.
You lived that long.
Oh my God.
I can't imagine.
Wow. So Joe had a suit and tie, and it was the one with thin ties. So you look like a recording studio yeah. exec from like the 1960s.
Okay.
Good idea. Yeah. Skinny tie to go with your freakishly skinny body.
Yeah. That was brilliant. The idea.
So,
and you were skinnier then, I bet.
I'm about the same.
Ugh.
Apparently, Joe answered like there was some kind of notice on the bottom of our website for an intern. And apparently, he actually sent an email in, and someone actually read it and called you back.
Yeah, that's what happened.
And little known fact, Joe Kolbeck was also an alternative cinema customer.
Yes, I was. Yeah, I don't really know how I got the catalog. I don't remember. I think I saw something. Yeah, it was definitely through that. But I think I saw an ad for something like underground exploitation or something like that. And I was like, oh, and because I was a big fanboy back in the day, so I sent away for it, got it, and the rest is history.
Joe Kolbeck sent his order in for Goblin. This is must be in the 90s, right?
Yes.
So it came through the website. It's very heartwarming, Joe.
It is, yeah.
And how did I find out about you, young
That's
man?
That's what I was about to ask you. Like, I was actually thinking, I actually don't really have a clear idea of how I ended up working here.
Oh, maybe it was
Well, the first time we met was at Genghis Khan in Pittsburgh.
Genghis Khan is a show in Pittsburgh run by Mike and Amy Watt.
Mm-hmm.
We went, and I went, and I met you. And it's hard not to miss Henrik because of his outrageous clothing.
And they were that was kind of toned down compared to how it is now.
Yeah. That was phase – I call that phase one, Henrik, which was like the fisherman hat.
Yeah, phase one. I think that's fair. That's a fair statement.
And we got to talking, and I think I called you up and said, well, and we started chatting on the phone about, hey, well, do you ever think about, working here? And then you hopped in your car and you came down.
It was, you brought that up after Cinema Wasteland, which was the second time you and I had ever met.
Oh, really?
You mentioned the idea of doing an internship and would I be willing to leave? And I said, immediately. I remember that very clearly, and then you guys did a trial run with me at Monster Mania. You had me drive to South Jersey.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I sold at your booth, and then I was at breakfast before the show the second day. It was brought to my attention that there could possibly be an internship if the proper setup could be made, so that I had a place to stay, per diem or something to get by.
What year was that?
That was probably 2005. Maybe early 2006. Well, the funny thing was that that wasn't even the end, because after Monster Mania, 4 months went by and I figured it was just not going to happen. And I remember very clearly it was a Monday, and I had a voicemail saying that you guys had found a place for me to stay. I could arrange the whole shebang, and could I do it in 2 weeks?
Is that right?
Yeah. And I immediately just started packing that day. And then I went, because I was working on cable access at the time, and I went in and did the show and told everybody, bye.
Really?
And then 2 weeks later, I made my first trip to North Jersey. It's It's something working here. It can be really fast-paced sometimes. It can. I mean, it depends on what phase of when I was working here, because at one point I was working strictly in marketing, and then I was moved to helping, you know, pick up the slack in the right. catalog department, and which was actually fun, more fun than you'd think, like, especially when you get to talk to the people that...
Oh, you have to answer the phone and talk to many some AC customers.
Many times.
Yeah, AC is a very unique place for indie releases.
And there were people that would place orders, like, within 2 days of each other or a day of each other. Like, obsessive, you know. Just.
So your experience working for Pop Cinema is Pop Cinema, alternative cinema. So you worked in a variety of different areas. Like, for a while, you'd be doing DVD authoring.
Yeah.
Or spot checking discs.
Yes.
QC, quality control, QC.
Watching the whole movie, yeah.
Some marketing.
Con sales, convention stuff. Okay. Like, a lot of convention stuff.
What about when we do press mailings to...
Oh, yeah. Especially, and sometimes when I was in just marketing, I would put those together. Like, we would send out, like, sometimes it would end up being like 150-something press packages. And I'd put them together when I worked in marketing, and then when I moved to helping and shipping and receiving, I would do it as well. Like, right. I would have to put those together. Those were big days. Like, we would need to get, like, a heads up a day or two before that, right. that we were going to have to do those. I also, I feel like I worked in every department there was. I mean, pretty much.
Well, not accounting.
Not accounting. I tried, though.
No, you didn't.
No, and I didn't at all. But,
What was your experience like, Joe?
Hey, Uncle Farts! I've looked everywhere, and I can't find my Shrek 2 boogie board.
Well, okay, well, how was your experience?
See, this is why I don't like to be on podcasts.
Absolutely. Joe, how was your experience through the mind of Uncle Farts?
In 5 seconds. Five.
Four. Or Scooper. Like, you have to be them, and they're gonna tell the audience what it's like to work for AC.
Looks like I'm gonna have to do some hardcore sleuthing.
I would say that working for AC or Pop Cinema, it's like working for any other job. As far as post-production is concerned, I learned a lot working here.
What advice can you give to either young or new filmmakers?
A lot of people are very ambitious, and it's something that they want to do, and you can because of the availability of prosumer equipment. But I would really say that you don't have to go to school, but at least
you really don't.
Read a book or something. I mean, really learn film theory, and I'm not saying that to be a snob. I'm saying that because it will really help you. I mean, a lot of people shoot, you know, just superfluous amounts of coverage, and it's really a waste of time. And I think that you know, learning what shots you need to complete a scene, better to finish a scene with the most minimal amount of shots, it'll really help you, because then it just things move faster, and then in post you're not going through tons of shots that and takes that you're not going to end up using.
Filmmaking is a something to be learned, or do you think it's a natural talent that people have?
I definitely think that some people, yes, are much more visual, but even then you need to know the terms, you need to know the language, because there is a language that comes with directing. I mean, a director of photography is going to need to know what type of shot you want. You can't say, hey, do that shot from that movie.
There were a lot of circumstances where you guys were kind of thrown into the field, especially you, Joe. When you first started, you were just kind of informed, we're shooting...
Lust in Space.
We're shooting Lust in Space, and you're shooting the behind-the-scenes goodbye.
Right.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was, yeah.
And that... Was there anything to be learned from the set of Seduction Cinema films?
I was only on about, as far as Seduction Cinema is concerned, I think I was only on about three or four? I think I was on about four. Appreciate what Bacchus does. I mean, he makes product. You know, he makes product. You know, he goes in there, he gets it done. You know, he has his blueprint as to what he needs to get shot, and that's it. And he doesn't get emotionally attached to it, and that's actually quite good when making these kinds of films. Because it is just that. It's a job.
Do you think there's that the basic yin and yang, or the flip side of filmmaking? Do you feel a lot of filmmakers are kind of writing a love letter to horror by making their films? And on the flip side of that is a guy like Bacchus, who is making a film to fill a slot as a job.
Yes. John Bacchus is making he's making a specific product to fill a niche market. I think H.G. Lewis was doing something that was like in terms of the content was groundbreaking.
Oh, I think it is horribly fascinating, the concept of business versus creative, and sometimes they mix really wonderfully, and other times they don't. But I think a lot of filmmakers, especially young filmmakers or new to filmmaking, person's new to filmmaking, don't have the grasp on the business side of it, of filling a slot. They're making a love letter to horror because so many fans are shooting who have no concept of how they're going to get it distributed, or they're not making the movie for a distributor to be distributed. Then you have the flip side, I would say, H.G. Lewis, Roger Corman, or to an extent, the Seduction Cinema output, the H.R. Blueberry output of films, you know, for the softcore television market. And then somewhere in the middle there, if you're lucky, something will be artistic.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I really respect someone like H.R. Blueberry. I mean, it's like he's a craftsman, you know?
By the way, H.R. Blueberry, these are the films produced by Jim Wynorski, Bresford Wives, House on Hooter Hill. And yes, certainly you could have a chuckle. But, you know, these are films that are made specifically for a market.
Yeah, they're made specifically for a market. And I'm sure someone would look at the movies and go, oh, my God, this is bad. And sure, it's bad from a artistic perspective. You're not looking at these movies for art. But from a technical perspective, I would say that they're perfectly fine.
I would agree.
Yes.
I wanted to chime in because I actually think that it's more complicated than like young filmmakers not understanding to fill a slot. I think that they
fill a slot.
But that is a goal with many young filmmakers.
Jim Wynorski did that too.
I believe it.
Okay.
No, but what I mean is, I think that and we're back. I think that a lot of young filmmakers, from my own experience, a lot of people really believe that what they're making is what the market wants. They just aren't aware. A lot of people seem to be making movies thinking people will want to see them. And I think that if anything, I think when you're first starting out, unless you have your finger, unless you have access to the pulse, you know, to put your finger on it of what's going to sell, you might as well make the movie you want to make, you know, like, and make it the best movie you can.
Well, if you're going to make a movie that you want to make, don't just assume or expect that it's going to be distributed in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Yeah. Make it to show that you can make a movie, a good movie.
I think actually your film is a very good example. By the way, both of these gentlemen on the show have or will have films nationally distributed in a DVD market. Joe Kolbeck did a film called Blood, Sex, Nightmare. Is your name on that?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
okay.
It is. Yeah. Blood and Sex Nightmare.
Blood and Sex Nightmare. It's an exploitation film.
The critically ashamed Blood and Sex Nightmare.
And Henrik Kudo has an anthology film called Faces of Schlock. Now, I would, at this point of recording this podcast, the Face of Schlock, the entire package is not together. It's being distributed by one of the alternative cinema labels. And I would say that the film qualifies as what I would call a quote-unquote
tough sell.
Mm-hmm. And I think when you see the packaging, you'll see that it has more of an exploitative edge, a harder edge, more of a Suicide Girls edge to mm-hmm. it. Just so happens at this place in time, horror comedies
are dead. Yeah. And, you know, that movie wasn't solidly made to sell either. I mean, it was made, me and Chris LaMartina, Andrew Shearer, Justin Channel, we wanted to make a good movie together. Like, we all had the same problem of, like, none of us had the resources or time to really dedicate to make a feature separately. So we all joined together and worked really hard and made a really good feature together. I mean, we all represented our own senses of humor and the things we like, and we wrote the stories intending them to be good. I mean, that was definitely more of a personal movie, so it's more of a personal triumph to get it out to the world.
What was your influence to put the excessive nudity in the film?
See, I really like that stuff. Like, that's just the truth. Like, if I was making a romantic comedy and it didn't have to be like PG-13, there's gonna be boobs. Like, it, because they're fun. Like, you know, when you're watching a good movie and there's nudity, it's kind of like, you know. It's a good movie, good movie, good movie. Oh, thank you for that. Okay, and then now it's back to the good movie. I think, you know, I mean, to an extent, you know, we were thinking about selling it by putting a little bit of nudity. I mean, if you notice, my segment has
the mega
leaps
nudity.
And bounds. And I directed the wraparounds, nudity, 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 nudity.
Are you criticized by the other filmmakers on the project for having all that nudity?
Not at all. In fact, I think they're probably pretty happy I took that cross. Because, you know, it costs money and you have to arrange it and it can be awkward. Not with me, because I rule with an iron fist. I would just, you know.
Would you say it's an awkward thing to shoot nudity?
No, it depends on who you're shooting. It always depends on who you're shooting. If the person's comfortable and confident, you're fine. I mean, when we shot that Ruby LaRocca stars in my segment in Faces Talk called Sleigh Ride, I had never met Ruby before when we shot the movie. She loved the script, so she was in. We brought her on. And, you know, Joe was there. Joe was the director of photography on Sleigh Ride. And you remember, like, it was, like, kind of rocky for maybe 2 hours. And then she was in.
What, the nudity was rocky?
Just the filming. Like, because I didn't know her. So, like, the communication stuff, I don't know this person is a stranger. But, I mean, she was right on board.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I mean, she's an old pro, so, you know.
Yeah. I think that if you take an actress that has been in a lot of movies and take a director that's only made maybe one or two, it could be easy to get walked on by the actress, even if, I mean, not whether she's trying or not. That could be very easy to be intimidated because, you know, they have more experience than you do.
Like if Linnea Quigley is on set.
Yeah, that would definitely, like something like that would definitely make you, like, you know, I would love to work with Debbie Rochon one day.
Right.
I love Debbie to death, and she's a sweetheart, sweet person, but I would feel so, like, weird.
Because of her experience. Because
she's been in so many movies, and she's a really great actress. For me, you know, to have only made so many movies or so many projects and stuff, I would feel nervous. When we shot the wraparounds for Faces of Schlock, we had to hire nudity, and at that point I was back in Dayton, Ohio. We shot most of it out here, like in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey. But when I was back in Ohio, I'd never shot nudity in my hometown, like good nudity. I'd shot, like, poorly lit nudity, but never, like, some solid nudity, and I was very, I would say, at my most Jim Wynorski-esque, because I just got on Model Mayhem. I just got on Model Mayhem, found a girl, emailed her, was like, will you do this?
Which film was this?
This was for Faces, for the wraparounds, for the girl that's in the shower and the wraparounds.
Yeah, she's naked. Something else. Who is she?
Her name's Tia Maria.
She's in Ohio?
She's in Detroit. She's actually she'll be so excited I'm talking about her. She's a retired model and photographer.
Why? Why is she retired?
She got burnt out. I mean, she's been in it for about 8 years.
Does she shoot film photography?
You know what? She used to.
Really?
She does. You know what? You could talk to her on the phone and she'd probably be naked while she's on the phone with you. You can maybe get even more.
How single is she?
Not very single at all.
Okay.
But
she has 3 husbands.
17 husbands. But no, she was...
found her on Model Mayhem?
Model Mayhem. And, you know, I emailed her and I said, hey, I'm making an independent movie. I have blank amount of money to spend on this character. This character takes a shower and then does this dialogue. And I sent her the dialogue. I sent her the scene. And I was like, would you be interested? And if so, can we figure out a time frame? And she responded back and she said, that sounds really cool. I've always wanted to try acting. She was just a model, like a photographer model. And she showed up on the set and we just did it. And she was completely not nervous about being naked.
She's just naked in the shower.
She's in a shower scene that parodies shower scenes.
Yes.
And then she's just naked. I love it because I don't want to give away too much, but there's a scene in the wraparounds we make fun of, like, asshole directors. And there's a scene where the director's arguing with the main actress, and while they're arguing, there's just a naked girl in the shower between them.
That was pretty awesome.
That was my favorite gag in the whole thing.
So, folks out there, there's a site called modelmayhem.com, and you can – it's a wonderful site. And you could actually just type in a zip code and you say, I want to see models within 5 miles of this zip code.
And you could even put, like, I want only ones that shoot nudes.
Yes.
And stuff like that.
And the models list, you know, I do nudity, I don't do nudity. It's very straightforward. I think that you could easily cast. It's a great website to hire talent. The talent may not be actress, they're models.
Yeah.
But some models have natural ability.
Work with them.
Yeah.
You got to work with them.
The thing, though, is it's not explicitly for, it's not really for video work.
It's for modeling.
It's for modeling. Photography. Or, you know, if you're like, I think they have something on there like Photoshop Wizard. Like, yep. If it's for people who do Photoshop, it's not really for production. Like if you're doing like a movie or something.
It's not easy to make a movie.
No.
It's not easy to make a movie. I think the worst horror, because I've experienced it myself, the worst horror is you make a movie and you spend 20 days of your life, I mean miserable days of your life, overwhelming days, being ill. I mean, the film I shot in 1989, The Basement, which is coming out this year. It was a Super 8 feature film. I'm sure I'll be talking about it ad nauseum. It was 20 days of my life. I mean, I remember Tim O'Rourke on the set. He always had an ill, kind of greenish complexion.
Work. It's so much work.
He drank Jolt Cola and ate Circus Peanuts. Circus Peanuts are these sugary.
I love them.
Okay.
I love Circus. They're the orange spongy Circus Peanuts.
At one point, it was probably midnight. We were in that graveyard scene where we had all these extras, and Tim O'Raw was holding his heart, and to John Fedeli, he's like, oh, John, I can't feel my heart. And he was, like, serious, you know, and, like, to do all that work, and then at the end, having the project just, like, shelved. It did. I mean, that project didn't even get to editing, you know, but for filmmakers who go through the entire task to wind up with a, you know, an authored disc, to have the sort of the huge, massive life disappointment of not getting any offers on your movie to be distributed, it's indescribable. And I would say it's just a process. I don't think any young filmmaker should just assume that their film is going to get distributed in this day and age.
And not now.
So, yeah, no, it's just so difficult.
It's rough. You really have to focus on what you really want to do. Do you want to make it a job, or do you want to just make a movie because you want to make a movie? You know, lots of people have made movies for themselves that ended up being fantastic and possibly successful. If you make a movie that's personal, it's probably going to withstand the test of time and be interesting consistently.
What's an example?
I mean, it's the example I know the best is that you guys might know my first feature, Marty Jenkins and the Vampire Bitches. I still get emails about it. It costs $300. It doesn't look great. Right. We tried very hard. I mean, it was like my movie where I was 1 foot out of the backyard.
What's it called?
Marty Jenkins and the Vampire Bitches.
The guy that's in it now Marty has Jenkins. Like a YouTube show.
Yeah, Halfway Okay. You can check him out at halfwayokay.com.
And I on YouTube, I'm watching this and I'm like, like it's one of these.
He's a really funny guy. But
so if he gets very popular with that, that's where your movie will become valuable. Well, is he as funny in your movie or no?
Yeah, he is. And he wrote a lot of the screenplay with me, but my point is like...
What's his name?
Sean Green.
Oh, yeah, he's very funny.
The screenplay, I stand by that the screenplay was really solid and that we tried very hard to make the best movie we could under the circumstances we had. And because of that, like, I'm still, when I sell it, I put it on eBay every now and then just to try and get another copy out there, you know? And I get flooded with people who watch it over and over and over again.
You do?
I have, I mean, like, when I say flooded, I
this
mean...
This is your movie, Marty Jenkins.
It's a movie I self-released, and I've gotten, like, 15 emails of people saying, like, I've watched it again and again, and I've watched it with friends, and we've...
Have you sold enough of this film to make a profit?
I've definitely made a profit. And at this point, any copy I sell is just gravy.
So that's a very good example of making a movie that costs so little and therefore it doesn't need any big distribution for you to make your money back.
It didn't. I would have liked it, but it didn't need
Doesn't your friend Andrew Shearer do similar things?
Andrew's brilliant. Like, he made Blood Witch for Sleigh Ride, and he knew that he had a specific group of people that liked to buy his movies. So he made Blood Witch for a certain amount of money, and he made it back before Faces was even complete.
He did?
Mm-hmm. And I encouraged everybody because we didn't initially make it assuming we would get distribution. We made it to make it. So my big thing was I was telling everybody, like, we, you know, if you want to make any money off the movie, since there's, you know, you got to do it yourself. So, like, the big agreement was that we made sure everybody got ample copyage to sell themselves.
Right.
And Andrew's always been good at that.
Good stuff, guys. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Alternative Cinema's throwing a lesbian vampire promotion the entire month of July to celebrate the
coming out
of the Lesbian Vampire Lovers Collection. Select sale items on the left sidebar of the alternativecinema.com to locate our blood-soaked seductive selections at amazingly low prices. Or, if you feel daring, try to win the killer lesbian vampire giveaway. You can win one of 5 free copies of the brand new DVD set,
Lesbian Vampire Lovers Collection,
plus copies of Vampires on Blu-ray, Vampire Ecstasy DVD, a Lust for Dracula poster, and a The Adventures of Van Helsing poster by entering the July is Lesbian Vampire Month contest. We all know the first vampire on film was Count Orlac from F.W. Moreau's Nosferatu, starring Max Wreck. Since then, the vampire has an incredible run in motion pictures, the most famous being, of course, Count Dracula. To win your complimentary copy of the Lesbian Vampire Lovers Collection, plus a copy of Vampires on Blu-ray, Vampire Ecstasy on DVD, and a set of 2 posters from the films Lust for Dracula and The Sexy Adventures of Van Helsing, send an email reply to the question,
what actor reprised the role of Count
Dracula
more times than any other actor?
Send your answer to publicity@alternativecinema.com. That's PUBLICITY at alternativecinema.com. Publicity@alternativecinema.com.
Five random winners with correct answers will be alerted by email the final week of July. And be sure to check back the first of every month for the new AC promotion and new contest on the Alternative Cinema Podcast.
Perhaps they need a good...
Jimmy, are you okay?
Well, Mom, I'm looking at all these horror sites, but I want one that kills!
Killer Reviews is the place to be for horror, science fiction, and fantasy.
Oh. Killer Reviews.
I'll be right back!
Horror reviews, interviews, a killer podcast in a form for freaks like
Killer Reviews.
So there you have it, Jimmy. KillerReviews.com has everything you need. Jimmy? Jimmy? Jimmy!
Hi, hello. My name is Ken.
And my name is Seth. We're the hosts of the Movies About Girls podcast.
We'd like you to listen to our show, because on our 50th episode...
we're going
to
kill a guy.
Until then, we're going to watch hardcore pornography...
and laugh at jerks.
So if you like tits and murder...
and gags and bitterness...
then listen to the Movies About Girls podcast, the podcast for teenage losers of all ages. MoviesAboutGirls.com.
Hey, do you guys know about KillerReviews.com?
KillerReviews.com?
Yes, do you know about... tell me, do you know anything about KillerReviews.com?
I've heard a little bit, but I would like you to tell me more in detail.
Have you been to KillerReviews.com?
Once or twice in between pornography.
KillerReviews.com is a site that is owned and operated by our webmaster, Greg Dumont.
Greg Dumont is a fantastic webmaster.
He sounds like a real jerk.
Like a real rat bastard.
I emailed Greg Dumont the other day, and do you know what he emailed back?
What?
That he's like, I'm having a barbecue today, and he doesn't live in New Jersey, and I really
want to go to,
like, actually a bubble cloud like actually appeared over my head, and there was like a grill and dogs and burgers on it, but I could actually smell it.
Where does he live?
He lives in a state outside of New Jersey.
We could get there.
So
tonight.
I just, you know, KillerReviews.com. Mm. Greg Dumont, it's a great website. He had an interview with Richard Christie on his podcast.
Guy from Howard Stern Show.
Tell me about Richard Christie. What do you know?
Well, he's in the band The Charred Walls of the Damned, and he's a writer on the Howard Stern Show. I listened to him. I was listening to him all day today.
You're kidding.
I drove like an hour, like 100 miles
today. Do you have Sirius satellite radio?
Of course I have Sirius satellite radio.
And you hear, does Richard Christie have his own segment?
No, he's like one of the group. And every now and then, like he it's Richard and Sal, they write for the show. Like they do prank calls and make song parodies and stuff like that.
He's funny?
Very funny.
If you go to KillerReviews.com and click on the bar up top, podcasts, and go into the archive, you'll see an interview with Richard Christie.
He's a big horror nerd.
Really?
Richard Christie. Oh, yeah. And, like, I don't want to go into it because, like, I'll just be reminiscing about the Howard Stern Show.
Right.
What good is that?
You know, back in the day...
yes?
You used to have to go to an arcade to play video games.
That's true.
That's not true, Joe.
In the 1980s, if you watch a film like Joysticks...
I've never heard of Joysticks.
You heard of Joysticks?
Okay, yes.
He's if drunk. You watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I think there's like a scene in an arcade.
I just never got past the part where the girl took where Phoebe Cates brought out her dumped out her jugs.
Ah, Phoebe.
Hey, we're back.
what was that just now?
That was a break.
That was a break?
Was
were
a
you recording
break.
like was that anything?
What
like,
are we
Because I it's like, why are we continuing to talk in our microphones and speak in our
it was fun.
Like it's called fun, Joe.
Yeah. Oh, fun.
You know, I listen to the AC podcast a lot when I'm like, I listen to his podcast either when I'm walking the dog or when I'm like...
You know, I need to tell you guys about some of the upcoming releases on Alternative Cinema. Alternative Cinema, by the way, .com is a store which you order online, or if you're at a horror convention and Alternative Cinema is actually there, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Anyone want a pretzel rod?
Don't eat on the podcast. That's rude.
No, okay.
I thought that you were the natural selection to actually do an AC podcast.
Well, there's a pilot with me interviewing Brett Piper.
Oh, where is that?
I don't know. I mean, it exists somewhere.
Well, when is this? Where is this pilot?
It was when I was still an intern. It was for when it was Pop Cinema Radio.
And oh, my goodness.
I did a whole production piece, remember?
Did you record it to a hard drive, or does it exist on a tape?
It exists on a hard drive. I recorded it. You were on it at the end, and I did an interview with Brett Piper promoting Shakarama, and
kidding.
Then we did Ask Mike Grasso. I made production pieces. I made the intros.
You did?
Yeah. It just never – and after that, it never continued. But I made a pilot episode.
Where do you think these files are?
I bet I could get it.
Where do you think they are?
It's probably on my old laptop or something.
Oh, you think you have that?
If I can find it, I'll send it to you.
That would be very interesting. But I would like to hear that.
I made bumpers, advertisingalternativecinema.com. I made intros. I had Brink Stevens say, you're watching or you're listening to Pop Cinema Radio. I had all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
I went all out. I made a pilot.
Wow.
Do you remember this, Joe?
I remember him working on it, yeah.
Yeah, and I was the host.
Oh, my God.
I even remember you interviewing Brett.
Yeah.
I remember that, too, yeah.
Well, okay.
So has Mike come across as crazy yet?
So.
I can't believe you don't remember that. You listened to it in the car. I remember.
I did?
I gave you a CD of it.
It was on the radio?
I gave you a CD of it.
Huh. Well, folks, if we could find this, we'll actually use it as an episode.
Oh.
So. I'd like to go through some stuff, some DVDs, some releases that are coming soon. Alternative Cinema is basically the home of the variety of labels from this studio and others, like Shakarama, Seduction Cinema, Retro Seduction Cinema, After Hours, Blue Underground. We now carry Synapse Films.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that yet.
We do. So there's a lot of stuff. Do you guys know about 42nd Street Pete's Wild, Nude, and Natural?
No, I don't know about.
Joe, do you know about
Street
it?
Pete's Wild,
I absolutely do.
Can you please tell me about it?
Do it, Joe.
42nd Street Pete's Wild, Nude, and Natural is about 32 of the wildest, most nudist and natural 8mm loops from the 70s.
No, it's a loop collection, but
what's a loop?
What is a loop?
Yeah,
it is a
okay, for someone today.
Yes.
Basically, people who, let's say, look at a dirty movie on the internet, they call those tube sites.
Yes.
And you'll have you'll go to a tube site.
You're watching a single scene.
And you're watching like something that's what, 5 to 8 minutes long or shorter?
Yes, correct.
I mean, are those loops? Would you say? Would you call them loops?
Well,
they're usually edited from something.
Well,
longer,
a loop was a stag scene shot in 8mm originally, and then they shot some in 16, I believe.
Do you
as
want me
well.
To explain it better than Joe is?
Do you know what a loop is? For someone who life is a computer and an iPhone, what is an 8mm loop?
In the old days,
you couldn't just buy porno.
You couldn't buy a porno movie, so you bought a porno scene on 8mm film.
On a piece of film.
A piece of film.
And on a roll of film.
Yeah, and you would project it, and it would be noisy, and you'd see people boffing on it.
But that's a stag film, but that's not technically – you asked what a loop was.
Well, stag is still a loop, no?
Well, the reason they were called loops is because the end of the film connected it with the beginning, and it just played continuously on a projector.
Oh, yeah, technically speaking, you're right. Do you remember like the Warner Brothers cartoons where all of a sudden they show a movie and all of a sudden like – stag reel would come up and they'd be like, so stag reel.
42nd Street Pete's Wild, Nude, and Natural is essentially
stag reels. It's a stag reel as opposed to like a hardcore loop.
Sure.
It's like, no, I'm asking you.
Oh, well, I mean, it's the same thing. I think loop was specific to going to any of the
Jack Palaces
on 42nd Street, you know, like Show World or something like that, you know? And you went into a booth where you put in some quarters, and then this thing would play on.
And you did your business.
And then you did your thing.
So you'd have to play a film on a projector, or go to 42nd Street or a city to an adult bookstore to see some naughty stuff.
Yeah.
But now, because of DVD and someone like 42nd Street Pete, he's assembled a bunch of these and put them, like a million of them, so to speak, on two DVDs.
Right. And you no longer have to feel obligated to tip the kid with them off.
Yeah.
It says here, Grindhouse personality 42nd Street Pete turns world traveler with Wild, Nude, and Natural, a never-before-seen classic nudie loop collection featuring sexy footage of exotic beauties from the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
It's a lot of hair.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
That's available on
July 13th.
Wow.
Book of Lore, Grave Mistakes. It's a horror double feature. Why is it that I always like connect a Chris LaMartina movie with... like loops, like when he was on the show.
Because he brought you loops.
What?
And you may have eaten Fruit Loops.
Yeah, maybe.
Chris is a porn fanatic.
No, he's no Chris. No, hold on, guys, hold on. No, Chris is addicted to porn, and it is a problem. And I remember because when he made One Foot in the Grave, his segment of Faces of Schlock,
he couldn't actually edit it himself because he needed someone to do the mouse, and Jimmy George had to use the mouse. So that he...
What? No, it's not funny. It's a sickness.
Let's get right so from the horse's mouth. So that
Chris could
pound his butt.
Is it true that his original short for Faces of Schlock was just a 30-minute fuck scene?
I wouldn't call it so much fuck as
30-minute.
Chris is not going to pick up the phone.
No, he's his life. It's Saturday night. He's out doing stuff.
Oh, that's right.
But I would think he'd answer if you were.
Chris, I'm not here to leave a message.
Let's leave a message.
Not the tone.
I'll leave a message.
Okay, fine.
When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Chris. Hey, it's Mike Rosso. It's the July Alternative Cinema Podcast. Henrik is saying that...
Like you're addicted to porn?
Is that true? So, I'm gonna defend you. Is this gonna end your friendship?
No, Chris is used to me telling outrageous lies about him.
Okay. Alright, we love you. Goodbye.
It's just what I do. I make a lie, because it's funny.
Chris made a film called Book of Lore.
And a film called Grave Mistakes.
And I'll tell a very brief story about this. Chris sent his screeners to my dad.
Is that Chris? Is that Chris LaMartina calling you back?
Yes, it is.
He's at a party.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Good. You're on the Alternative Cinema Podcast.
Oh, really? Are you recording with Henrik right now?
that's right.
And how?
Sorry, I was at dinner. Now I'm stepping outside to talk to you guys.
I just want to clear up a few things.
Okay.
Henrik is saying that you're addicted to porn.
No, this is great. No, it's definitely not true.
Yeah, well,
it's more you're addicted to masturbation.
I've been defending you.
Thanks.
So I told him that, you know, it'd be interesting if, you know, broke up your friendship on the podcast.
That'd be great. I'll lose my cush government job. Oh, wait, I already lost it.
Oh.
Chris, since this is going to be a July podcast, tell me, what will you be doing in July?
In July, I'll probably be prepping my new feature film, Witch's Brew. I'll be shooting by mid-July or shooting by August.
Can you briefly tell me what Witch's Brew is?
Yeah, sure. It's a beer drinker's horror movie. It's about these two guys that microbrew beer, and they screw over a coven of witches, and in turn, the witches curse their beer, and from that point forward, anyone who drinks the beer suffers a gruesome, ironic demise.
Is it true that you worked your ass off to raise money to make this feature?
Yes, I totally made an ass of myself on Facebook and various social network avenues.
Did he make
it? Sure that I could raise the $10,000 to make this movie.
So, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Do I need to edit the podcast, or can I leave all the stuff in about, like, the porn?
That's fine. I don't
it's
care.
Very obvious that I'm lying, Chris.
If it's Henrik saying it, it's not like I'm saying it.
Yeah, Henrik's saying it's very obvious that he was lying. So I think
I'm always lying.
Oh, he's saying he's always lying. So we're gonna leave it in.
Excellent.
So
I love you, Italian Stallion.
Is there anything
you
anything you like to plug?
No. That's pretty much it.
Oh, what are you doing right now?
I am at dinner with my girlfriend's folks.
Well, listen, I want you...
And I'm being a horrible boyfriend, so I should probably go.
No, keep him on.
Oh, no, I'm not going to keep him on. Well, listen, you enjoy your Saturday night, unlike us losers.
All right, guys, take care. Later, Henrik.
Right. Later, tater bater.
Bye. He's a nice young man.
No, he's a really nice guy. I've been bullying Chris since I knew him. And by bullying, I mean just telling lies about him places.
All right, so Chris sent me Grave Mistakes.
Yeah.
Well, first he sent me Book of Lore, or you were working here and you said, check out Book of Lore.
I was talking to Chris about this a week ago. I can't remember if it was that I gave you a copy or that it arrived and I was like, hey, this is from my friend. You really ought to look at it. Because Chris sends amazing-looking press packs. Like, remember it came with, like, its own folder that looked like the Book of Lore?
I do remember that, yes.
He sends really, really great packages. He has a really great package.
I watched it, and basically everything gets watched for 5 minutes and turned off.
I fought for it because I had seen it just before you got it, And I was really rooting for it because I thought it was an excellent movie.
Whatever was going on at the time at the studio when Book of Lore came to my desk didn't jibe with what the film was and what the market was at that time.
Absolutely.
Probably because we were trying to go for more polished Brett Piper kind of like Bacterium movies.
Yeah.
Which I was, you know, fighting for to get onto Sci-Fi Channel, and I failed miserably. And really going for a much more polished looking film. And then a few, maybe at least a year later, or maybe more, Grave Mistakes showed up. And I decided to distribute the movie because the first distributor that licensed the movie would get a free voodoo head, shrunken head.
I remember that.
And I needed a shrunken head.
If you license this movie, you get a free doll,
shrunken head.
A free shrunken head.
It's hanging off the light in your office.
Yeah, so I needed a shrunken head. And that's why I licensed the movie.
See, I made the mistake.
I offer a different kind of head
to anybody who will license my movie.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So
that's good. So
it's pretty good.
But I licensed the movie, and unbeknownst to me, when I brought it to the marketing department, the feature really wasn't in step with what's kind of going on, meaning it's an anthology. It's kind of light. It's sort of like a Tales from the Crypt light. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun, some good special effects in it, and we found a very difficult time finding placement for it to release it, which I called Chris back, and I said, Chris, what's up with Book of Lore? Because Book of Lore has a much more serious tone.
Yeah.
You know, with like kid killing.
Yeah, and it's like an adventure, like a old-timey kind of a, like an older adventure movie, like these kids are trying to uncover something, and they just keep getting deeper and deeper in trouble.
So I asked Chris if we could have Book of Lore with Grave Mistakes to put out a horror double feature. I will tell you guys, and I've said this on the Alternative Cinema podcast before, for all film, you know, indie, low-budget, no-budget filmmakers out there, it is brutal. It has nothing to do with AC, Pop Cinema, or any company under my roof.
Please.
This is not about me. This is not about alternative cinema. This is not about Pop Cinema. It's about filmmaking. And I can tell you, I can rattle off at least six filmmakers who will tell you that they've sent their film around to distributors, the West Coast
big boys
like Lionsgate, to small fries like us, and there's nothing going on out there, and there are no offers on the table. There's just nothing going on. Should that discourage you? No. So I would say that Book of Lore, Grave Mistakes, is an underdog. It's absolutely an underdog. It's a micro-budget, no-budget set of feature films that we are very aggressively putting out on the market. And it's a really, really tough sell. I've told Chris himself, it's a tough sell. Tough sell. I will tell you that the worst thing to say to a filmmaker is, I do not like your film. I don't think I've ever told you that I do not like Marty Jenkins.
I don't think so. I mean, but I think the worst thing you could ever tell a filmmaker is, like, here's your daughter's head.
No filmmaker wants to hear that the person doesn't like their film. That's why you get Dear John letters from distributors. Well, first of all, I think we are a rare group here. Because we are sort of very grassrootsy. I don't think any other distributors that are on the West Coast really have the time of day to even discuss the film.
No.
I mean,
when I sent you Marty Jenkins, you took a look at it. You gave me some good advice. You did give good advice. And you always, whenever you give advice to me at least, you always kind of seem nervous. Like, I know you really don't want this. Right. But it's like you're giving me a kitten that's like missing hair.
He's like, number one.
Tits in the first 2 minutes.
Number two, tits in the first 4 minutes. No, but that's not what you said. That really isn't what Mike said, guys. Because I know Mike, I think sometimes you worry you're gonna get pegged as like a guy who's just going like,
put your tits in the movie.
But Mike was like, you know, talking about lighting.
Yes.
And he talked about you know, speeding up the edit, which is always a good idea. Less is always more in a movie. You know, you should always make it as fast-paced as you can. You want to keep people sitting there watching it. But you gave good advice, and good advice to a 19-year-old who made a feature.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't mean that movie is shit. It just means that movie is not perfect. And what movie is perfect? I mean, none of Joe's movies have even been watchable.
I'm the worst.
Book of Lore, Grave Mistakes, horror double feature. These are micro-budget, no-budget features. It came out on May 18th on the Camp Motion Picture label. It is available on all the .coms, and hopefully
by that time, by this time, by that time, by this time, in a store.
In a store.
Yeah. Do you guys know anything about City of the Living Dead?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, is that Gates of Hell?
Yeah, Gates of Hell.
Okay.
Blue Underground remastered the film and put it out on Blu-ray on May 25th.
Oh, very nice.
I saw the Gates of Hell, back then it was called Gates of Hell, in 1983, I think it was, may have been 84.
That's the Fulci one?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not the one with the midget who bites into his mom's boobs.
No. Nope.
No, that's Burial Ground.
Burial Ground, yeah. Okay.
Gates of Hell, City of the Living Dead, I saw in a theater in 1983.
They had theaters then?
Yes. And, you know, back then, and even now, I mean, you rarely see it, you know, these foreign horror films, people don't get it. Like, people in the 80s, I mean, they were going to see Poltergeist and, you know, the Steven Spielberg-type horror films. So when something like Gates of Hell played, people had big question marks over the head watching that.
Nightmare logic.
The aesthetic of horror films shot in Italy, it's a very different aesthetic.
Italians are threatening. Yeah. I think that's... But no, I understand what you mean. No, European horror movies are really different because it's like they're like what's his name? Not Polanski, Kubrick.
Yes.
Like how Kubrick's belief was that film wasn't necessarily about narrative; it was about mood. It was about mood, so he treated it more like music than he did like a book, like a story, which meant a lot of his movies were kind of slow. But I think a lot of European film, especially like Italian movies, it's more about mood and the gut reaction of the visuals.
I would have said yes.
Then the story is secondary from there, especially with like Argento and stuff,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, that's how
you and then later Argento just gave up completely on story altogether.
Is that why both myself and my dad's jaw was just dropped when we saw Suspiria in the theater?
Oh my, that movie's great. I mean, it's insane.
No, it just was weird.
Well, yeah.
I'm talking about in the theater when I saw it in whatever year it was. What, 1980? What year was that?
1852.
You know, I mean, I was going to see films like Logan's Run and these blockbusters, and then we go to this little, the Hackensack or Tanny Theater, and we're like, oh my God, Suspiria. Because they played some ads on the local channels for it. My dad and I were just completely confused.
I mean,
it's a long time ago.
Yeah. I remember renting it on VHS.
Really?
That's how I discovered it.
Well, you know, on July 13th, Feeding the Masses Horror Collection comes out.
Oh, really? That's a Richard Griffin movie, Feeding the Masses.
This is a Richard Griffin joint in the sense that we have Feeding the Masses, Creature from the Hillbilly Lagoon.
Very good movie.
Necroville, which he co-directed with Billy Garbarino.
Yes, and was the director of photography.
Yes. And Splatter Disco, which a film I produced.
Splatter Disco.
Have you seen any of these films?
I've seen all of them.
You have?
Mike.
Before I worked here, I had seen all of the movies you guys put out. And when I worked here, I watched all of the movies you put out.
You Wait. Did?
Wait, who are you?
Wait, no.
You did? No, for real.
I didn't watch a lot of the
After Hours.
After Hours, the harder stuff. But like, I quality checked Creature from the Hillbilly Lagoon like 3 times. Because there was some little glitch that we had to fix on it. And then...
okay.
I had seen Feeding the Masses before I worked here. I saw Splatter Disco. Once again, I quality checked it. What was the last one was...
Splatter Disco.
Splatter Disco. Yeah, I quality checked. I'm pretty sure I quality
checked.
So you've
seen these films?
I've seen them all. Yeah, all 4.
Wow. I'm a fan of Richard's films. I'm thrilled because his films are so professional.
And there's a guy who fills a niche, if you want to talk about, like, who makes movies to sell. Richard makes movies to sell, but he always seems to be able to. You know, Richard, I love you. He always seems to be able to maintain like that he likes the movie he's making, but that he's planning to sell it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I would agree 100%.
I'm smart, I know.
If I had to pick a favorite out of the group, I think I would pick Feeding the Masses.
And that was very successful too.
Yeah,
it was a very successful film.
Yeah,
it's available on iTunes right now.
That is true. How do you know that?
I pay attention, Mike. Like, I really do. I really keep up.
Wow. I'm going to give you a hug. Not right this second, but...
Do you remember when I worked in marketing, I knew just everything. I knew
how
all...
How did you know that Feeding the Masses is available on iTunes, since it got on iTunes after you left our employ?
Because I went to alternativecinema.com to see what you guys were up to, and there it was.
Really?
Or I think it was because I know that it's advertised on there. Or it was that you and I were having a phone conversation about how abysmal distribution was, and you mentioned that it was one of the movies they got on iTunes.
It's conceivable that Richard saw an ad in Fangoria. We advertised so massively heavy in the first part of the last decade, you know, the 2000s as they call it, that a lot of filmmakers just called us up and said, hey, I saw your ad in Fangoria, and I made a movie, and I'd like to send it to you. I think that's how we hooked up with Richard. And he sent Feeding the Masses, and at that time, I mean...
It's also written by Trent Haga. I almost forgot to mention that.
Oh, Trent, wonderful guy. You know, I'm almost sad we could have a whole funeral show for the DVD market. You know, I'm really, really sad because Hollywood Video, by the way, as of May, is no more. Hollywood Video, Movie Gallery,
Games
are
Swap.
Games over, pal.
Or what was that game store they owned? It wasn't Game Swap. It was like Game Exchange or something like that.
It's Hollywood Video and Movie Gallery are no more. And I'm sad. And I'm sad because...
You used to date.
Jacob Ennis's film Stash was picked up by Hollywood Video.
And did
well. And I was shocked. Not because it's a good movie, bad movie, because it was late in the game for Hollywood Video. They were struggling for years, struggling with debt and bankruptcy. And they picked up our little feature, Stash. And I know that Jacob was really, really excited. And he should be.
Yeah.
To be a filmmaker and like go into like a Hollywood Video and see your movie.
Yeah.
Next to a major motion picture is an amazing thing. And I think I have not experienced that for a few years myself when I went into Hollywood Video and I saw Joe Sarno's Suburban Secrets R-rated version on the shelf. And then a year later went into Blockbuster and saw SSI.
I was about to say, I have a story about SSI.
Go for it.
Because I'm the horse on the cover of SSI.
That is true.
And you, it's because I wear these round glasses and it's very obvious it's me because Paige was like, leave your glasses on under the horse mask.
Right.
But I lived right in Butler, right across
when
the
you
street.
Worked here.
When I worked here, I lived right in, across the street. And I did not have a lot of friends most of the time. So I would always be at Blockbuster renting movies on Saturday night. And one night I go in and there's SSI and I'm like on the cover of this softcore porn that is in Blockbuster. But like I took it and I walked right up to the front and pointed out to the lady that I was the one on the cover.
It was a shocking moment.
A few months
later. I mean, I joke around a lot sometimes to Joe. I say, Joe, you know, I could really just die. And Joe will look at me strange. Oh, really? Maybe he'll do a funny voice. And for real, it's like I've gotten, as a producer, it's very, you know, it's like you can lift the black cloud that mostly is over my head most days. And I could really rejoice that as a producer, I never thought I'd have a film on HBO. And I never, ever, ever, ever thought that a seduction cinema film would be in Blockbuster Video. Ever. Ever. Ever.
Ever.
And there it was with the Seduction Cinema logo on it. And the R-rated version, Blockbuster calls us and they're like, oh, can we have it unrated?
Yeah, can we have a spicy cut?
Yeah. Shocking. There's a special version just for them.
I remember. I QC'd that disc.
You did?
Yep.
That was an ordeal. I remember. That was like a hustle putting it. There was the cover art. There was the different cuts of the movie. I mean, there was a hustle bustle. And I'm sad because that's over now. Because Blockbuster is really...
in deep shit.
As of this recording, they're about... they're like $1 billion in debt.
Wow, they're going to throw a party with BP.
That's a lot of money, my friend. $1 billion. And the experience...
Carl Sagan with a B.
And the last experience I had with Stash in Hollywood Video, like, it's over. It's over. It's a sad, sad day. Should I say it again?
Sad?
Yeah, I mean, how many times have I said it? Richard Griffin's Feeding the Masses. I take many things for granted. And I just take for granted the fact that, you know, back in the day, we're talking 5 years ago, I was acquiring films to go into Blockbuster. That's a very cool thing.
You know, I actually have a funny thing about Feeding the Masses. When I first started working here,
yes,
I saw that you were cut. Around the office, there was a check being cut for Richard Griffin.
You did?
For Feeding the Masses.
How did you know that?
I like overheard it, or I would mail it. I was like mailing it.
Okay.
I didn't see how much the check was for or anything, but it was a check to Richard Griffin involving Feeding the Masses.
Okay.
And I was just like, holy shit, a filmmaker's getting paid for their film. What is happening? Like, and then a pig flew through the office. Wow. We tried to tackle it and cook it. But no, really. Like, that was one of the first moments I was like, wow. Because Mike's reputation, I mean, I'm going to say it, because Mike can't say it or else it looks like he's a... Mike pays people.
Well, thank you.
So, I mean, like, I've really never heard anybody go, that Mike Rosso didn't pay... Blah, blah, blah. No, I've heard it about other people. No names. But no, Mike pays people. I mean, like, when I was going in for the internship, I asked my friends... And that was one of the first things that was said to me was, you're working for the only guy who pays.
Wow. Thank you very much.
When Brett Piper told Bruce Hallenbeck that he was working for you, Bruce Hallenbeck said, congratulations, you're working for the most honest guy in this business.
Wow. I'm blushing.
When I first came to work here, someone was like, a good friend of mine, close friend of mine, was like, Mike Rosso has a hefty rod. And I was like, good.
Well, that happens to be true.
That's true too, yeah.
But looking at Richard's films, this is the Feeding the Masses Horror Collection. This is a collection of four Richard Griffin films. One is pretty much Billy's film that Richard co-directed. It's interesting, the kind of looking at them as a collection. This is the first time I'm looking at it as a collection from the perspective of an independent filmmaker getting your film distributed. Because if you look at Feeding the Masses and then the rest... Creature from the Hillbilly Lagoon, Necroville, Splatter Disco. Why was Feeding the Masses the most successful of the group?
It was timing, I believe.
And it was timing, and it was the fact that... See, there you
Have
know,
we
a lot
even
of,
mentioned Joe is on the cover of Feeding the Masses?
Joe's hoping we didn't, but...
No, it's fine. Yeah,
I'm oh, Joe cover, is yeah. the vampire-looking zombie on the cover. The sickly...
The very feminine-looking...
He didn't even have to paint his skin. I mean, he's that sickly looking.
That's how I came. That's how I showed up.
We just brushed his hair and it all fell out.
Yeah, it just fell off my head. I'm completely severely dehydrated.
It really sucks that I don't know. I guess people don't appreciate the now. Maybe I'm not appreciating the now. And you tend to look at the past through rose-colored glasses, and everything's always just, kumbaya,
yeah,
the past.
I have a theory about the past, and that is, you know how all the tense situations turned out, so the past looks great.
Yes, right.
But, I mean, like you can look back and be like, man, the 80s was all this or that, but that's because you know how the Cold War turned out.
Right. Like, in reality,
when
it
you
sucked.
When you didn't know about how the Cold War was going to turn out, it was tense times sometimes.
Yeah.
I assume I wasn't really around. I was like four.
Well, we're under the roof here at Alternative Cinema and Pop Cinema. I mean, we do it all, and including the cover box. And I believe that particular box for Feeding the Masses, if I'm not mistaken, Joe Colbeck didn't, like, Brett Piper was doing your makeup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brett did the makeup.
Dwayne shot the photo.
Dwayne shot it, and I think Brett actually lit it too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what a glorious day! A glorious day that never got celebrated because it's just like part of a workload. Here's Brett working on makeup for Richard's
and Brett's
box
a genius,
cover.
By the way, I mean, has it been mentioned enough? That Brett's a genius.
Brett Piper is the most, one of the most underappreciated men in low budget movie making. Just end of story.
End of story.
End of story.
End of story.
End of story. End of story. End of story. Underappreciated. I knew Brett for years, and I invited Brett to come to the studio and to basically live. You know, he lived up the block. A very similar. I mean, you can see a lot of similarities here. I mean, you came from Ohio to work here, and pretty much.
And I lived in the house that Brett lived in for like 3 months.
And it was a really cool time for the studio. A lot of people just picked up their bags and came and lived here.
I still have no exact idea why you brought me out in the first place.
It was a cultivation of talents, I think. And Brett worked on a number of films for the studio. Which were kind of actually sort of segueing from the Feeding the Masses Horror Collection. But I do want to thank Richard for working on all those wonderful films. And I'm so apologetic to you for being so grouchy on the phone most of the time. But, I don't really mean it. You know, I love you. And I really want to continue making films. But it's so horrible that all of our favorite chains are closing right now. And that everyone wants everything for free. And that no one wants to pay for anything anymore. And what I mean by that is that everyone just wants to watch things for free on the internet. And it doesn't even have anything to do with BitTorrent, or as you call it, rapid steal.
Rapid theft.
Rapid theft. It has nothing to do with that. People want to go to Hulu and watch it for free. Everything's going to be a advertiser based watch it for free platform on the internet, in my opinion. But there's so little room for indie features right now, and I parallel that to when the corporations bought the theaters and all the drive-ins closed. There's nothing going on.
I have 4 active drive-ins within 20 miles of my home in Dayton, Ohio. I go to the drive-in to see all the movies. Oh. It's awesome.
On June 15th, the Shockarama Horror Collection came out, and this is a new package containing the films that Brett Piper made when he had his tenure here at the studio. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say Bite Me, Screaming Dead, Shockarama, Bacterium.
Yes.
See, I was a very good employee. I knew the synopses. I knew what was in the
movies. Shut up, Henrik. You're fired. Again.
But I mean, like, I was obsessed with understanding, like, every label name. It's sick.
You're telling me you're underappreciated here.
No. I'm just saying, like, because you look so shocked. That was really what I did, though. I'm just saying.
Okay. No.
See, he doesn't hate you anymore because he knows how it all turned out.
You a question. Was there ever really a time when you came in and actually was, like, not in a good mood?
When you weren't in a good mood or yeah. I wasn't in
no,
a good
No, no. You're always in a good mood. Was I ever not in a good mood?
Do you want a true answer on this, Mike?
I highly suggest the Shockarama collection, and I will tell you why. Because Brett Piper
is a one-man dynamo.
Now, I'm not saying he didn't have a crew on these productions, because some of these productions, like Shockarama and Joe Sarno's Suburban Secrets, are two of the highest budgeted features I've ever made in my life. Okay? Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I don't know if I should tell anybody, that the Shockarama cost...
I remember hearing that. I was wondering if you were going to drop that.
Yes, I'm dropping that.
Wow.
So,
like, it's hot.
Please buy this DVD. Because for $22.98, that's our price on AC.com, you're getting 4 feature films made by Brett Piper.
$22.98?
Yeah.
That's a really good price.
That's a really good price. This man, Brett Piper...
is a one-man dynamo.
Did I say it? I did say it, and I'll say it again. Because I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. I've never seen a man take a... 40 by 40 studio. The studio's not too big here.
No.
And if you see the end of Bite Me, where Michael Thomas' character, Michael Thomas, rest in peace, he passed away last year. Michael Thomas' character, he walks into what is a 100-foot Godzilla.
Yeah, Godzilla.
It's like a Godzilla
statue. And you can walk inside of it.
It's sort of like that dinosaur in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
You can walk into this Godzilla, and it's like... you know, it's like a hollow inside of a building. And he created that using miniatures and green screen. I've just never seen anything like it in my life.
Brett's really, it's pretty incredible. There were several times I would be leaving the studio late because I didn't have internet access when I was an intern. So Mike would graciously let me leech the internet after work was over. And Brett would be in that studio. I think he was working on Bacterium stuff. Just, you know, with his boombox on,
right,
and his glasses on, filthy from, like, you know, moving model stuff around, and he'd be, you know, shooting one frame at a time. I don't know how he hasn't lost his mind.
Well, just a little bit before he left, he was getting a little bit concerned about his posterity, so he actually made 2 children for himself out of the dirt outside and breathed life into them.
When I worked here, the first time we had...
And I distinctly remember that because that day I realized that he's God.
One day when I came into work, I remember when I first started working here, you might remember I made this joke. It was raining really, really hard, like a really hard rain. And I came in and went, when the hell is Brett Piper going to build us a fucking ark?
That's pretty funny.
And he did.
And he did build an ark, and he built 2 of every animal because he didn't want to use the real thing because he kit-bashed and made animals.
I wasn't allowed on the ark.
You know what the parallel is here? The only reason Brett left was because, I mean, there's no other way of putting it, the business dried up.
Yeah.
the business dried up. This whole Hollywood Video closing, I mean, this has been going on. They've been like... Clawing for their survival for years now. And finally, they're dead.
Yeah.
You know?
Death-rattled.
It's sad. This is a sad podcast.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm not like Chris LaMartina. Like, I'm not always smiling like he and Jimmy George. They do. They just smile all the time. You can hear it on
Chris,
the podcast.
These guys, I mean, this guy Henrik, right? He is a
ball buster.
I really am.
You really are.
I've been friends with Chris for so long.
See, everyone thinks
so
I'm automatically going
to
cut things out. Like, Joe's over there, like, giving me like,
I haven't
the signal.
Once.
He's like, going to cut this out,
I haven't
right?
once. I'm the one that said you had a hefty rod. Brett's movies, like when I first came to work here, Brett was actually, I wasn't like starstruck, but I was really excited to meet Brett Piper because I had rented Cyclops. Like when I was like, you know, 17, I had rented his movie Cyclops at Blockbuster.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So it was cool. It was like, because, you know, I'm a young guy and like I'm meeting somebody who I rented their movie at Blockbuster. That's really exciting, you know? And I think at that point, I bought Screaming Dead at Best Buy when I was like 17 or 18.
You're kidding.
No. The only one I hadn't seen was Bite Me, which, wait, no, I rented Bite Me before I came to work for you guys. I rented it because there was a video store in Dayton called Precinct 13 that I basically lived at, and they had all of your films. So I started renting all of your movies when you guys were talking to me about being an intern. So I had seen all like almost all of Brett Piper's. I'd seen Drainiac as well, but it was the incomplete version.
So you being 23 years old, like Screaming Dead 2003 is like a century ago for you.
It was
the Brett Piper. Yes, yeah,
he's fantastic. And if you like movies, especially movies that are legitimate throwbacks. Like, they're not trying to, like, oh, look at us, we're the 1950s style drive-in stuff. If you want the stuff that's just legit, Brett is legit. He is too legit to quit. And I mean that. I mean that. $22 is a great price for those four movies.
So let's review. Book of Lore, Grave Mistakes came out on May 18th. Chris LaMartina, it's...
The porn addict, yeah.
You guys are killing me.
I love you, Chris.
I can't see now. I can't cut anything out because I'd be like cutting, dicing, and slicing the whole podcast.
But look at how happy you are. How much fun you're having.
I'm not having that much fun.
You got a big smile on your face right now.
I'm happy because I actually have a podcast.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because I threatened to like just cancel it, and we talked about the
Richard Griffin's
Feeding the Masses horror collection comes out July 13th. That's pretty exciting.
And what's that retail price?
$22.98, you get four films.
Those are recent. I mean, like Necroville is also really good. I actually, when I was at
Necroville Zombie Town. What was that called? Zombie Town, Zombieville, Zombie Land.
Zombie Land. Oh yeah.
Zombie Land is Necroville.
Yeah, except
Billy did his first.
Except people actually die in Necroville. Spoiler alert. I'm sorry. Okay, in Zombie Land, spoiler, but in Zombie Land, like no characters get killed by zombies.
They don't.
No, they just kill zombies.
So Necroville's better.
When I was down at the shore, we watched Necroville. I saw it when I authored it on DVD.
Okay.
Is Bill Murray in Necroville?
No.
Okay.
But no, we watched Necroville when I because I'm on vacation. That's why I'm in Jersey, guys. We watched Down at the Shore. It was one of the movies we watched.
Like last night?
Two nights ago, yeah.
You're kidding.
No.
That's awesome.
My friend Josh, did you
BitTorrent it or did you watch a disc?
I got it on this website you might have heard of. It's called destroytheindustry.org. My friend, actually, funny thing is my friend Josh, before I was friends with him, I sold him a copy of Necroville at a convention. So he had the copy I had sold him.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, out of the back of my car, not working for you guys. but no, we watched it and everybody agrees it's very funny.
I would like to hear from a listener.
Is that your call to arms?
It's alternativecinemapodcast@gmail.com.
alternativecinemapodcast@gmail.com. Send us a letter.
I'll tell you what. If you write Mike's podcast, I will write you a minute-long ukulele song about you.
You will?
Yeah, if somebody will write in. That isn't Scotch.
By the way, a big hello to Scotch, Noel Scotch Anderson.
You're a good guy, man.
Yeah. Let's give a plug for his radio show.
Oh, Rock 102 in Fargo, yeah. North Dakota.
You can get it on the interweb.
Rock102.com, I believe.
Yeah, you could actually hear his show from Fargo, North Dakota on the internet.
I've been featured on it. It was great.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Scotch is a great friend to the podcast. I mean, Scotch is a great friend to the podcast.
He did that awesome drawing.
He did. One where he packed the pounds on me. Yeah, you know, I have to tell you, Scotch, apparently you were dead on. Because I've shown it to people.
People
I'm like,
so happy in the picture,
I'm
too.
Like, look at John, man. Look, John, youthful. Look how great John looks. Look at me. And then all of a sudden, like, whoever's looking at the picture, like, their eyebrow actually goes up. And they're like, well, Mike, that's what you look like. I'm like, well, but what about the sweat? I'm like, I don't sweat like that.
You're not sweating right. Well, he's sweating a little bit.
Actually, he
that's because Joe's not wearing any pants.
He left out the third chin.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get a nice juicy steak right now.
Oh, my God. But if you guys email alternativecinemapodcast@gmail.com, Mike will send me your information. I will write a song about how great you are. And then they'll play it on the next Alternative Cinema podcast.
Hey, man, that's a good deal.
So, I mean it.
What I really want to hear is from if you're a filmmaker or a film fan listening to this podcast, steer me here. Like, was this helpful? Was this a helpful podcast? Has this been helpful?
Has it changed your life?
Because I really would like to be able to help filmmakers, like I did with Henrik, and I'm very proud. You know, I feel, you know, Henrik, he moved on. He is performing now. Uke or Consequences is your new album.
It's my new album. It'll be available by the time this is up. It'll be on iTunes, and yes. It'll be available at ukeordie.com. That's U-K-E,
yes.
ordie.com.
I knew that Henrik needed to be a performer. And when he was working here, I said, that guy's got to get on a stage. I didn't know it was going to be a uke, but he did, and I'm very proud. And I'm also proud because I highly criticized his film, Marty Jenkins, highly criticized him by pointing out some very simple things like, Henrik, you need lights. I don't care how many gigawatts of lux your camera has. These new cameras that are what, like 3 million ASA?
Yeah.
Where you could shoot with no light. Please.
Bullshit. And the funny thing is, it's a trick.
When you watch the movie... There are, some scenes are lit and some scenes aren't. You can pretty much see where Mike Rasso and I had our first phone call.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Yeah, if you watch it.
Marty Jenkins?
Yeah, there are scenes. I have copy if you want a new copy to take a look at, but
don't watch it.
but no, there are scenes where it's like it's natural lighting, and then there are a bunch of scenes where it is lit.
Right.
Because I'm not kidding. If you're talking to you on the phone, I went out and I got a Capital One credit card, which I still haven't paid off, and bought a $600 three-piece light kit, which Joe has used and broken.
What?
You did drop one once and it broke.
Oh, yes, that's true, yeah.
But see, regardless, yeah.
Electronic companies are trying to sell you something, my friends. I'm talking to every person out there listening. Now, back in the day, Super VHS was the bomb.
I've edited on Super VHS.
And JVC had the balls to actually place an ad where they had 13 video cassettes all lined up like a dominoes, basically saying that you can go 13 generations with this tape and you will have barely any loss. And I can tell you that is an utter lie. So let me tell you that electronic companies want to sell you their camera that claims you don't need lights.
And it is a lie.
Well, no.
You need lights.
You don't need lights if you're filming your bat mitzvah.
Joe's just laughing hilariously over there. Listen, I want to thank everyone for listening to this very unusual podcast.
Oh, yeah.
John Fedeli is alive and well, and he yeah. can be heard on the Film Photography Podcast. If you shoot with your digital camera stills, if you shoot stills, but you thought about, what is this film people are talking about? What are you talking film? What's a film camera? You can go to filmphotographypodcast.com. It's a podcast for people who love to shoot film or shoot digital and would like to try film. It's a very scary thing when you shoot film because there's no screen on the back of your camera and you don't know what you shot. But please, take it from me. If I can do it, so could you. Because I took a 15-year break from shooting film and I came back to it very rusty. And now I'm shooting formats of film I never knew existed before last year. So filmphotographypodcast.com, you could hear me. You could hear Dwayne Polkew.
Super positive.
And you could hear John Fedeli.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about film and have a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. Oh.
Hey,
we're gonna
leave now with one of Henrik's songs from his new album, Uke or Consequences.
And we're going to do Drunk Girl, right?
Drunk Girl.
That's the big super
hit.
Ultra mega hit, I assume. It's available on iTunes. You can find it. Just look up the album name because you'll never spell my name phonetically.
Okay, very good.
Thanks again for having me here, Mike.
Hey, Joe, see ya.
Oh, bye.
Go away, Joe. Sit on down here right next to me. Look me in the eyes, but you cannot see. Sitting alone at a party can be hell. And I'm sure you really mean well. Hey, drunk girl, don't bother me. Hey, drunk girl, just leave me be. Drunk girl, just go away. Find somewhere else to play. Well, you say you wanna hear me sing, but sloppy drunk loving just ain't my thing. You seem like you really wanna get far. I just wanna get back to my car. Hey, drunk girl, don't bother me. Hey, drunk girl, just leave me be. Drunk girl, just go away. Find somewhere else to play. Well, don't you come around here. Your breasts are out and smell like beer. You're nibbling on that pizza like a rat. There ain't no way I'm touching that. Drunk girl, don't bother me. Hey, drunk girl, just leave me. Drunk girl, just go away. Find somewhere else to play. Go time! Time to suck on some air, boy! Hey, drunk girl, just leave me be. Drunk girl, just go away. Find somewhere else.